Hey guys, thank you for tuning in. Today on the first episode of Made by Many podcast, we have Haley Jacobson, bisexual dream girl, writer, and the one behind your favorite Instagram survival guides. Haley, thank you so much for being on this episode of the pod.
You're so welcome.
So I just definitely want to kind of dive right in. I found you how most people find people in this day and age, which was via Instagram, but I would just love to talk about writing as an outlet for you and kind of how you've leveraged the platform of Instagram to kind of get your words and ideas out there.
Sure. Yeah. I've always been a writer. I come from like a nerdy family. We're all writers in our own right, not necessarily like professionally, but I do always share the anecdote that at birthdays and holidays and anniversaries, there is a sign-up list to give a speech. And we all sort of compete for which spot we get to go in. And so I grew up thinking that was totally normal. Like, you know, what better way to express your love and affection by a poem or a speech? And so that has been instilled in me from a very young age. You know, as I grew up, I always had writing as a hobby, especially as an only child. It was something that I just did to entertain myself. But what really changed for me was when I got to college, I started breaking through a lot of the barriers I had up around my heart and was sort of undoing a lot of trauma, especially from growing up in a very superficial area where I don't think that my creativity was watered, if you will. There was not a lot of room to grow.
Yeah.
And I kind of just really fell in with not the wrong crowd, but it certainly wasn't the right crowd for me. So I got to college, went to acting school, theater school. And instead of falling in love with acting, I fell in love with playwriting. And I was asked to do a lot of like autobiographical work. And all of a sudden, I just had so much to write because I was always a storyteller. I never really wrote like a Dear Diary type thing. But for some reason, putting my thoughts and feelings and experiences into plays was the perfect combination of that storytelling and also like my guts and emotions that definitely needed a place to spill out onto. And then Instagram came around. I mean, it had been around, but it started being a thing junior, senior year of college when I graduated college in 2015. And I joined some challenge, yoga and writing challenge. And for the first time I started sharing my writing more publicly on Instagram, not to a wide audience, just people, you know, in from my high school and people from my college. And
on your personal Instagram page, right?
On my personal Instagram page. Okay. Yeah. And it actually wasn't received very well. People definitely thought it was weird that I was writing like very long captions and sort of like bearing my soul in this way and you know, navigating away from like the clever one-liners and the curated photos. But then there was like a few people who responded really well to it. And then all of a sudden, like some people I met through the challenge were following me and they loved my writing and it just felt good and it felt right. And I was no stranger to people being mean to me. So yeah. And I had already experienced that in college outside of Instagram. So I kind of kept at it and it just turned out that I was way ahead of the curve. Sort of the writing age of Instagram, like was there to meet me like a year or two later, the same person who had offered the challenge. She was a huge, huge Instagrammer. She has like 3 million followers. Her name is Rachel. Now we're friends, which is crazy to me. On a whim, she shared one of my poems and then all of a sudden floods of people came in who I didn't know at all, completely out of my network.
Was it a kind of like a good feeling of the people that you didn't know flooding to read your writing, people that were kind of out of your wheelhouse or out of your personal bubble?
Yeah, it felt really good. It felt like I had found the people that my writing was trying to speak to. I always say that I'm writing for my 16-year-old self who had her voice silenced. And I think that I like provide a mirror, especially for like the people who have, you know, been conditioned into womanhood. I felt like I deserved praise. I felt like I was working hard, but I wasn't necessarily like seeking it. I was just happy to be writing and just putting my writing in a place and feeling really good about that. And besides Instagram, I'm also a playwright. I run my own theater company called Brunch Theater. And so I've written a lot of plays since I graduated as well.
I love that. No, and it was I think it was a perfect way to kind of tell the story. And I think it was also beautiful that you kind of didn't have almost like kind of a touch of imposter syndrome or feeling like you weren't deserving when kind of attention came your way once your work was shared, because I feel like so many people feel unworthy. So it's really nice to hear that you felt like you were deserving. It actually reminds me of a bisexual survival guide that you posted. And I actually shared with a friend who's like kind of recently been coming into her own identity. And one of the points being like, you don't have to prove your past or prove your history of who you are now. And I think that that's something that's really important and kind of can fit into so many realms, you know?
Truly. Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. The novel that I'm writing now is about survivorhood in many ways and what it means to be a survivor in a post Me Too world. And I think that's a question that a lot of people grapple with as well. Like, well, let me show you the proof of the trauma that I'm telling you about. Like,
for sure.
We don't need to provide any proof because like, the proof is that we are voicing it in the first place, if we choose to do so.
Mm. Yeah, I would love to talk more about your novel too. When did you begin, I guess, work on that? If there's any kind of clear time.
Well, I've known that I wanted to write a novel about being a young person for a long time. I say young person because I really wanted to dive into the high school experience. Mm. From a retrospective of someone a little bit older. So my novel, the protagonist is a young woman named Savannah. She's in college, she's a sophomore in college, and she's looking back at events that transpired when she was in high school with a sexual assault and just sort of like finding her voice as a survivor, as we each, you know, deserve to do. Have our own relationship with surviving. That's one of the, you know, plot points of the book, but it's also about just being a young person in school and discovering more about yourself and your sexuality and flirting and school and just all the things that can happen in college. And it's quite different than my college experience. I'm writing like this super woke, like liberal arts college, small school around like 2018, 2019. And I went to like theater school and I wasn't out and I had no time to think about being gay when I was in college. But in this novel, it's just about this young woman finding her voice. And I took a class recently where my teacher, whose name is Austin, and they have a novel coming out soon, was talking about what my book felt like, and or like one of the sentiments from my book is like this idea of like when we're young, all of the language of like who we think we are, who we want to be is like, it's like percolating and it's in our brains and it's coming at the speed of light. But then when you go to talk, nothing comes out the way that you're thinking, and you're just sort of hurtling towards the person you want to be, but you're so not there yet. I love writing from that mindset because it's so vulnerable, because you have so many things that you want to say and you have no idea how to say them, but you're trying and you're failing.
So you talked about classes that you've gone to, or a class that you recently went to with writing. Have classes been kind of like a tool that you've used often, like in your journey as a writer, to kind of hone in on your skills and flex that muscle?
Yeah, I've had a lot of different relationships with classes. My senior year, I wrote a full-length play, my first full-length play as my thesis. I had a wonderful teacher named Kirsten Greenidge, and she was just like, she's such an amazing playwright and professor. But unfortunately, my classmates weren't so sweet. They were just kind of mean when I was presenting different scenes and parts of my play. And it was very strange. And my teacher took me aside privately and was like, hey, I don't know what's happening. They're being really nasty to you. I kind of think they're just really jealous. Would you just want to meet kind of one-on-one with me and not have to share as much because I feel like it's hindering your process? And I was like, yes, please. So I did that with her, but I also at the same time just like gathered a group of people in school that I felt really safe with. Mm-hmm. And I felt like could really just look at my art for like what it was and just give me like true, you know, feedback. I don't really like the word critique, but like constructive feedback is better. And it was a really great experience. And then at the end of my year, I had this like conference with my teachers and that same playwriting teacher was like, okay, so you had this great experience where we took you away from that class and that thing, but what are you going to do now that you're going into like real life? Like, mm-hmm. how are you going to escape people who are negative?
Right. Because your teacher's not going to just take you aside in real life for sure.
Right. And I was like, well, I don't know. Like, I think I'll figure that out later. And little did I know that same summer I would meet my writing mentor and go to Martha's Vineyard for the first time at the end of the summer. And my writing mentor is named Nancy, and she only allows people in her workshops to tell other people what they loved about writing. Her workshops are like profoundly life-changing because when you are safe, so often that's when like your creative genius can burst through, like in the embryonic stages of a creative project. You don't want to be shot down. Mm-hmm. You need love and affirmation. And then later, like as the baby, you know, as the baby is grown and has like a thicker skin and like, and you know what your child is, then you can start to get feedback. And so I met Nancy right out of college. And I just took it as like such a sign that I needed to like apply that kind of creative nourishment to everything I did for a long time before I was able to like go into a classroom setting and get critique. So I just went back to Martha's Vineyard every summer, took her workshop over and over again. And then in the last 2 years, I've gone to like, quote unquote, real writing classes at this school in New York City. It's been wonderful and very helpful. Now I can receive like real feedback and not blink twice about it because it's coming from like a very, it's just coming from an academic place. But that's what I always say to writers, especially new writers, is like, that red pen syndrome that my mentor talks about, where, you know, we're just so traumatized by you know, teachers growing up and just like what we've been fed about what good writing is, that like we take that red pen and we slash everything. That is not going to make you write more. That's going to paralyze you. I really love being in classes now where we can just like look at the work and ask good questions and say like, hey, this isn't working. I'm very comfortable doing that now because I've had so much affirmation from wonderful people in other classes to like build me up. I'm really happy that I found a lot of teachers who worked for me before feeling like I could go into any class and make it work for me, if that makes sense.
No, I think that does make sense. And I think that it sounds like the mentality or tactic that your mentor has of kind of like nurturing the baby or the child, like that I think that's an amazing approach, really. And I'm curious, as kind of like a non-writer, in any of the academic or just like feedback kind of settings, when something isn't working, do they provide feedback and kind of give suggestions on what could work? Or is then it your job to kind of workshop more and then present something once that's ready?
So actually in the class that I'm taking right now, it's a year-long class. It's called like a novel generator. And it's like a group of people that have come together under a professor, and like the goal is to get our manuscripts done by June. Mm-hmm. And it's a great class, but I was noticing that we did not have enough structure around how to give feedback. And every teacher is really different. And I felt myself do what Nancy has described as, like, Nancy always says this thing of, like, we think that we can run out of compliments, so we only give critique. And, but the mindset of, like critique feels never ending because we've been taught it's okay to, like, constantly criticize something. I mean, that's what we do to ourselves too. We can have the same mindset with, like, affirmation and compliments, and, like, but when we, like, hold them inside and we don't actually voice them, then, like, no new things can start to generate, if we're just not directing praise to where it should go. And in this class, we're supposed to break up our workshops between what's working and what's not, but, like, there was not a lot of, like, structure into, like, what does that mean and what does that look like? And I noticed that we were veering fast past the what's working and into the what's not working. Mm-hmm. And it was just getting a little mean. I just, like, had Nancy's voice in my ear of, like, I don't know, you know, humans just do this. Like, we have this tendency to, like, get way more comfortable in criticism than we are in, like, genuine praise. And so I kind of just separately brought it up to my class on Slack and was like, hey, I really want to dedicate more time to praise. Like, this is like a structure in which I find praise to be really helpful and give concrete examples of, like, what a writer is doing well. Mm. And because we had that whole conversation, we ended up talking to our teacher about it. And that led into a really fruitful discussion about how to speak about what's not working. Mm. And how to give writers actionables to then go forward, not fix the problem, but start to investigate why it's not working. It's really interesting to think, like, well, we should do the same thing with praise, right? Like, if you say, oh, that's really funny, that's a compliment, but that's not telling you as a writer why it's really funny. You know, is it the way, like, it can be as simple as, like, the way that the grammar is working there. You know, it's got that, like, small punctuation in a dialogue that sounds like a real person speaking and they're being really awkward. And so that, like, abrupt cutoff with a period is making it really funny. But how do I know that if you don't explain it to me? And the same goes with, you know, what isn't working. Someone said recently to me that my character's inner dialogue was really working at some points. At other points, it wasn't, because I was overdoing a joke as opposed to just, like, letting the reader think, like, oh, that's funny. And that's so helpful. Like, when I got that comment, I was like, yes, like, mind blown. Like, I'm going to take that sentence out because, like, I need to trust that my reader knows it's funny. I don't need to use my character as a device to tell my reader that it's funny. So that kind of feedback I live for, like, it makes me so happy.
I love how, I guess in that example too, the person said that at times it was working. Like, I'm not just pointing to that.
Yes.
But I like how they framed that.
They even, like, feedback. They gave me examples of times it was working, like, copy pasted from my actual submission. This is when it works. This is why. And this is when it doesn't. And that was so great. Like, it's such a good sandwich method to give feedback.
No, that sounds great. And it sounds like you being, I guess, kind of, like, vulnerable in a way and facilitating the conversation with your classmates about, like, let's kind of figure out a better way to give feedback that'll benefit us all. Kind of just led to this brighter spot in this class.
It was a little uncomfortable at first when we sort of brought it to the teacher.
It's really always a bit uncomfortable to say, like, I think that this kind of thing that you're leading, I think there's a better way to do it.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a good way to do that.
Yeah. My partner is in grad school for social work, and they're training to become a therapist. And they told me that their teachers say it is the job of the class to mutiny, to mutiny against the teacher. And I was like, whoa, that's intense, but it's social work school. So like, it's all about, you know, like language like that, of, you know, just totally turning the system upside down. And so I don't feel like we came on that strong, but in essence, I was like, oh, that does make sense. Like it is for the class. Like we're paying to be here. So we need to get out of it what we can, or at least voice what we're not getting.
So I want to kind of like shift gears a little bit. I guess this is kind of related to what we just ended on, but kind of talk about boundary work. I would love to get into this with you because I feel like out of everybody, I think maybe like in my personal life and on social media, you're the person that I've seen communicate boundaries the most clearly in a completely respectful way, but always reminding people of your boundaries and how to really communicate with you. And I just wanted to ask what the process has been like for you to get to this space today of being able to gently remind people of how to come to you.
Yeah, I think, well, I appreciate you saying that to me. It reinforces that I am doing what I have set out to do, what I have hoped to do for a long time. Boundaries are like a hot buzz word and have been for a little while now. I've thought a lot about how I think of myself when it comes to being on the internet. And, you know, when I'm talking about myself, I'll sort of like joke a little bit that I'm an influencer, and I love influencers. And in essence, yes, I am, but mm-hmm. I see myself like through and through as a writer, and like everything comes through as a writer. So I also think of myself as like a digital author, an author in the digital age. Social media allows people to contact you as an author in a way that they really couldn't before. And so I started to get a lot of, because a lot of the work that I do is quite like raw and can be perceived as very vulnerable. It is vulnerable, but by the time I'm usually writing about it or posting about it, I've processed it quite a lot. So it doesn't necessarily feel so vulnerable to me, but it makes people feel big things, like big feelings. Mm-hmm. And it makes, and often I'm holding up a mirror to people. And so they feel compelled and brave enough to want to talk about their big feelings. I noticed that people thought I was the person that they should share those big feelings with. It made me feel scared and bad and uncomfortable and really thrown when I would open a DM and see, like, you know, something so personal and typically traumatizing and violent from someone's past that they were grappling with, and my writing made them think about it or want to talk about it for the first time. At first I was like, well, you know, what do I expect? I'm putting these things out there, you know, people are reacting to it, and so they want to talk to me about it. Like, you know, if I don't want that to happen, then I shouldn't write about it. And that was like the beginning of that. Or I felt very compelled to talk to the people and like give them a lot of my energy and time. And also another part of it is like, I didn't really feel a lot of true empathy because my boundaries were crossed. And it's very hard to feel empathy when you're not in a place to receive something. If you feel accosted by someone, your defenses are going to go up and you're like, your body is basically going to say like, I don't like this. I don't like you, in essence, not really the person, but I don't like this feeling. Then I did something that really changed everything for me. And it still very much saddens me, where someone reached out who lived in a different country where the mental health care was not the same. And I just felt I really felt devastated for them. I felt guilty. I was writing so much about like my own mental health journey and, you know, knowing how privileged I am to have gotten, you know, the support that I have for mental illness. And I made the mistake of saying like, let's talk on the phone. And this person was just not well, you know, quite sick. And they started calling me a lot. And it was really scary. Not
that they had direct access to you.
I felt really hopeless. Like there was no way for me really to help this person. It was out of my control. I tried, but it got really bad and I had to block them. And then they made numerous other accounts to try and contact me, and Facebook and all of these, like, sort of pretending to be their mother, like all of these things. And it was really sad and I felt terrible and I felt guilty, and I didn't tell anyone about it until finally I told my therapist, because it was eating at me. And she was so nurturing and kind and was like, what else were you going to do? Like, that you tried your best, like, and you're prioritizing your safety. And after I got that affirmation, I told a few friends, they all agreed. And I just decided I had to change all of my language when it came to talking to people on social media. And I started saving, like, quick replies on my DMs, where, you know, you just copy and paste what you want to say, you send it off.
Even though my work is totally different from yours, it just kind of helps to keep you sane. Yeah. You don't have to, like, crafting a new reply every time is very energy draining, but I do like to kind of respond. So that's been
helpful. Yeah. Totally. So I started doing that. And that helped a lot, because I put that emotional energy into crafting those responses. Yes. And then they kind of did the work for me. And then, you know, through doing that, I sort of realized, I was like, oh, the gift I'm giving people is the writing. Mm-hmm. The writing is the gift. The writing is the emotional labor that I'm very happy to do. I don't think that I owe anything else at all. If people had the choice, they would choose the writing over a DM conversation with me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the writing provides the mirror, like you were talking about. Right. So it allows them to then, like, start that journey from there.
Right, right. And so, and also, I just always tell myself, like, you know, I have favorite authors, but I'm not showing up at their house.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not, like, knocking down their door to be like, let's talk about my trauma. It's like, no, it doesn't make sense. But of course, social media is different. And so then eventually I just decided I was going to make a whole long list of things I was already saying to people privately, so that people just knew. I mean, for some people, I think it would be totally fine to get a DM about sexual violence. For some people, that isn't triggering. I mean, it's not triggering for me to get a DM about depression. That maybe at one time it would have been, but it's not. But I don't think I'm ever going to be in a place where someone without any content warning telling me about an assault, it's probably going to ruin my day. Yeah. And that's just the reality. So, but you know what? The response has been amazing. Everyone who follows me feels so good, being like, hey, do you have a moment to talk to me right now? Like, everyone is so cute and respectful. I can tell that their minds are blown. They've never, like, thought about that. And now everyone's thinking about it for themselves. Mm-hmm. And it is just, they're so polite. Like, even with things like me, like, just, like, shit posting and being like, I'm sick, I don't feel well, people will be like, I have a recommendation, but, like, it's okay if you don't want to hear about it. And I'm like, no, tell me. Like, I feel crappy. Give me all of your stuff. Like, or just the littlest things. It just makes a world of difference. Makes me feel closer to people, because I really do have the time to be like, do I have the capacity to answer this question right now? And when I do, I have great conversations. I voice message people, which I know makes them feel, like, really close to me. And I think it's, like, more intimate. Oftentimes, like, if I'm just on a walk, it's so easy for me to do that. Feeling like I have a choice and that I'm not being accosted, it makes me feel like a human. I think also I have that in place with people in my life for real. I don't have a lot of messiness anymore in that, because a lot of those, like, friendships and relationships that were constantly crossing boundaries were really just, like, a mismatch of what I need from you and what you need from me are really, really different. And perhaps there are other people that can serve us better. Yeah, it's pretty good. And I date a literal therapist. So we talk about boundaries on a constant.
Yeah. Level. I've seen them actually. I've recently just gotten so into TikTok and follow you on TikTok. Same. I've seen your partner, and yourself kind of talking about, like, their work. And yeah, I feel like there've been a few that are highlighting their work, and I'm like, oh, this is so interesting.
They're so great. And they're so so smart. And I mean, I think truly my biggest flex is that I date a therapist. Like, my ego is huge. I have a huge ego because I'm dating a therapist. Like, I think is the hottest thing ever. I try and drop it into every conversation I have, and I'm so proud of them. I think, you know, they specifically work with trans people, and it's just so cool to see what they're doing. I mean, they're already able to work with people, which has been so awesome. And, but yeah, it's really been great to, you know, and also now I know a lot about, like, you know, therapists struggle with all this stuff too.
I've always been curious about that, and realizing that these therapists are kind of just like bearing so much of our emotional weight, or just our weight in general, and just knowing that they're people too.
Yeah, but therapists are also, I mean, knowing my partner and knowing the kind of person they are, they have this like amazing ability to like truly compartmentalize in a way, like for their own health and safety. Mm-hmm. And they worked for a long time with the Trevor Project, which is a suicide lifeline. And you just have to be able to do that in that job, because you have a 30-minute call, and they're sometimes really upsetting and scary. And you just sort of have to be able to, I mean, talk about boundaries, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just like, this is the time and space that I can offer you. And then I'm away.
I think that along with kind of having other people see what your boundaries are and respect you, it also like flips it back at them. And I know it did for me personally, and kind of take a minute to think about like, what should I ask for that I'm not asking for? And that could make life easier for myself and for those around me.
I think it's been
so illuminating.
I'm so glad. Yeah. I think everyone deserves to do that. And I think that has been a wonderfully like pleasant surprise after doing that, because I've seen a lot of people in my community. I mean, some people have been so kind and asked if they could use mine as a template and things like that. And I just think it's great. I just think it makes your like relationship with your audience just better and stronger. And I know that, I think that everybody wants to make sure that the way that they're approached is with like immense consideration.
Something else that I don't think we've touched on too heavily is your survival guides. So I know that there are kind of like different survival guides for different months. And I've seen like the bisexual survival guide. I remember when kind of COVID first started really blowing up here in the US, it wasn't a guide per se, but like the writing prompts for being indoors. I really loved that one. But kind of just curious about how that came to be.
I go through like a lot of phases with my writing where like sometimes I'll only want to write in a specific way. And I think in the last year, or like, you know, in the past 2 years, like I just like love writing in list format, and it's really like, it's very satisfying for me. And I started to notice that, and this unfortunately it's a lot harder for me to do during COVID, but you know, I love living in New York. I was finding that every place I would go, every like event I would come back from, or just going to hang with a friend, or something that happened on some sidewalk, or a conversation with my dad in his office. My dad works in downtown Manhattan. I would just like come away with this like little snippet, or like a self mantra that I would be reminded of or thought of in the moment. And I would just be like, this is great, but this isn't a whole poem. This is not a whole essay. This is just like another Nancyism, but like the, like how you get the balsamic reduction, just like the really good stuff.
Yeah.
And so I would just sort of through the month gather, like
nuggets.
Gathered these like snippets or sayings or mantras. And a lot of them also would come from, like, you know, I'm a really opinionated person. So they would come from like moments of not necessarily upset, but like passion and feeling or conversations with friends. I just was like, I'm just going to write them all down in a list. And I would sort of add to an iPhone note over the course of a month or write it all down in one sitting. I love to write on the subway. It's like so, so hard not to have that. I like all my best ideas come to me on the subway. People just responded so well to them. And it also made me feel so good because these are thoughts that I have all the time. And they're like my pillars of like, of me. And also they are things that I need to like remind myself of a lot, like, you know, things that I deserve to hear, or that sometimes I need to like, you know, gently reprimand myself for not doing. And so, yeah, they started to come together like that. And I can just like, when they start percolating, I can just like feel them happening where I'm just like, gotta write it down, gotta write it down. And it's great, but in the past couple of months, it's been hard because it's such a weird thing that I named them survival guides.
Yes.
It's so weird now. Sometimes I just feel like I don't have much to say. And part of that is like, I'm not out in the world. And then a lot of the time I think they can really create such a whirlwind, at a time where I don't feel like my voice is the one that needs to be heard. Mm-hmm. So those are the kind of things that I keep in mind, but it's fun when like a topic comes up, like bisexual survival guide was really fun to write. And I've written like holiday survival guide that's like buried on my feed somewhere, things like that.
Wow. Yeah. I think too, I mean, I think all forms of like writing and the art are important. I think that those guides in particular, like you said, they're kind of just these like nuggets that are put together in list form, and it kind of makes it more digestible for people to kind of go through and read.
And only, you know, some of them don't resonate with people at all, but like I love the idea that like maybe one out of 20 or however many I write is like a mind blown moment, or just something that like they already think but haven't figured out how to put down in words. Like I think that's really great and fun, and you know, everybody loves a good quote.
So I am planning on ending like every podcast episode with asking who and what keeps you going. So I would love to ask you who and or what keeps you going.
I'm gonna answer it right now. I think right now the there are so many who's that keep me going, but right now I think my best friend Jake is the person who's really keeping me going right now. When I speak to him, I feel like my most intelligent and wise self, and I feel like I can tap so deeply into all the things that really matter. And all the superficial crap kind of gets wiped away when I'm speaking to him. And I know he feels that way with me. So Jake Murphy is my who. And my what is, I think in such a wild time, like tenderness is my what that's keeping me going. And I think tenderness in seeing how people are tender with themselves and not in ways that are necessarily like huggy feely touchy, especially since we can't do that, but just like the little tiny things that people do for themselves that are comforting, seeing that kind of self-tenderness or the ways that we are tender with other people, that really fills me up when I feel like there's so much despair around. And that is one of the things that I love about TikTok. Like, I love to see these little moments of people's days and see like all the ways that you can be tender with yourself, things that I would just like never think of or ever do. Yeah, that's my what.
I love both. And where can people find you?
As always, they can find me on my Instagram, at Haley Jacobson. You can find me on TikTok, but it's not.
It's a different Haley.
It's a different Haley. It's not a different Haley, but you're not going to find any too much profound writing on there. But I have a couple things going around on there that I think are good. But yes, you can always find me on my Instagram. I do think one of these days I need to launch like a newsletter.
That'd be lovely. Yeah.
Look out for that. Especially like who knows where Instagram will go, but yeah, find me there. And hopefully my novel will come out in the next year and a half. That's my hope.
I have a good feeling that it will. And I'm excited to read it when it does. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I've enjoyed having you on this first episode. It's very special.
Thank you for having me.